In today's episode, it was all a dream. Or was it? Our friend Robert will help us figure that out. This is Waking Life. Samantha, Jesus, do we want to give you a stopwatch over here?
I'm just saying, people are going to show up and ruin everything. So
people aren't showing up. It's something for Mike.
Get on with it.
All right. So I tell you what, we'll start with Waking Life. You know what? I don't have a brilliant introduction this time.
So same as always.
Except I do have a guest to introduce. Hi. Why don't you tell us your name, friend?
Hey, I'm Robert.
Hey, Robert. Thanks for joining us here today on Funsphere Movie Club.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Glad to hear it.
Why don't we say Film Club?
We change it up. Movie, film,
Funsphere,
same things.
Film Club.
I think it's a fun club.
It is a fun club for fun people like myself. Hi, I'm Josh. And here we go.
I'm turning older.
Dreaming?
Wonderful, folks. Truly wonderful. And today's film we are talking about is Waking Life. I'll give a quick summary from the Wikipedia page, as I always do. Spoiler alert, folks, that's where I get most of my knowledge about the films or games we're talking about. It is a 2001 American experimental animated film written and directed by Richard Linklater.
Linklater.
Later? Is it Letter? Or it's Later. Link Later.
Do you know who that is?
He did. I know some of his other films.
Spy Kids, bro.
Spy Kids?
Did he really?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, we'll get into that in a minute because that's really interesting. The film explores the wide range of philosophical issues, including the nature of reality, dreams, lucid dreams, consciousness, the meaning of life, free will, and existentialism. And it is existentialism.
You're listening to Funsphere Glame Club.
I'm glad that you make fun of people with speech impediments.
Only because I also have one.
I hope you feel good about yourself and you sleep well tonight. You bastard. Anyway, I was going to say the most interesting thing I believe about this movie is that it is digitally rotoscoped in a very, very, interesting way, even for rotoscoping, I would say. I almost was like, is this rotoscoped or is this animated? It really, I think, is right on the border of the two art forms. All right. Well, Robert, since you're the guest here and this is your suggestion, tell us your experience with the film, like where you first came to know it, thoughts on it, and kind of why you suggested it to us.
Sure. Yeah, I have to recant. I'm pretty sure I was looking up the new show, one of the new DC showrunners the other day, and I got him confused. He is the actual director of Spy Kids. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Facts are important. No, I mean, I don't know. I guess I watched this movie probably like a decade, well over a decade, when I was like 18.
Okay.
Which explains probably like my fascination with the headiness of it at the time. I gotta say, like on a rewatch, it made me question my taste and my judgment.
I'm glad you could be candid about it.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
I was gonna say it definitely gave me the freshman year philosophy 101 vibes watching this film.
Yes.
But I gotta say, I'm glad I watched it. It is nice to see a film that I normally would say I would not give a second glance. I didn't even know it existed until I heard your suggestion for it. So thanks for that.
Happy to be of service.
I'm glad. All right. So, do you remember being more drawn to it just because of the elements of the film, or were you familiar
maybe
with
elements direct? Outside of the film at the time?
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's crazy. You pretty much hit the nail on the head. I was, like, taking a lot of philosophy and ethics classes at the time, and I think I remember being like, oh, wow, this is like, earth-shattering stuff. And, like, given the state of mind that I was in when I first watched it, I was like, I need to watch this sober and try and make sense of some of this stuff. And then I like, paid full attention, and I'm like, none of this shit actually makes any sense.
Yeah.
All right, so what do our other two friends here think about this film?
It kind of, it was kind of like, I want to say it Lynchian, but like somebody trying to be that.
Okay.
And like some of it I thought was kind of nice, but like the scene on the bridge kind of seemed like, I think this came out obviously before Twin Peaks The Return, but like the way it felt like it could have come from that, but also like that character would have been somebody that I don't know how to say, like maybe that would then get killed
in Twin Peaks,
right?
Okay.
Like condemned in a way. I don't know.
Okay. So, just one note I have here regarding this. Some of the people, like the cast, he made sure to make like a real mix of bona fide actors and just legitimate like philosophy majors and just people from all walks of life. So, I think that's kind of why, you know.
Walking life.
Walking life. Yes, wonderful.
No, nobody that's sounded the like they weren't reading.
You don't think so? I think some of them were just honestly even like straight rips of other source material, if I had to guess.
I mean, it seems like it was just like Wiley Wiggins at some point just having like random conversations with people who are like maybe like theoretical physicists and you know, philosophy nerds just having like random discussions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it does say it was completely written and directed by it, so it very well could have been he put these scripts in front of everyone. There's one person that I was like, did he literally just pull a recording of this guy? And I'm
the guy Alex out in the car.
Alex Jones, yes, noted scumbag.
Oh shit! Yeah, that's the guy who's like screaming, turning red,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Oh no, he was the one in the cop car, like going down
the
road.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No.
Yes.
Oh, damn, screaming. that's a young.
That is a very young Alex Jones, because this is 2001 again. So yeah,
is that pre-InfoWars? Like even
it very well may have been, yeah. Or like
all
right
these
at the
guys
launch.
Are like failed actors or former actors.
Well, Ethan Hawke, right? Like yeah, he's.
Well,
he's
I mean, like all notable. The right wing hosts, they're all like
yeah. Like, I could see that. So yeah, apparently also there's an Easter egg that the character that Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy play. They're actually characters from another movie called Before Sunrise from 1995. So I don't know if
all for the Linklater heads out there.
Yes, he of course did write and direct that. So that is another interesting thing.
So, with my perception of this movie, my previous experience with, Linklater was I saw Slacker.
Okay.
Back in like 2013, and I really enjoyed that one, and then we saw Boyhood about like a year after it came out.
Okay.
This show, so we tried to watch it last night while we were eating, and the visual effects
we're
not
getting
not a good idea.
Okay. I could see it like being like
very dizzying and nauseating.
Not a fan of the rotoscope.
No. I mean, there was some. It was a cool idea, but like having to watch it for the length of a movie was a tall ask.
Okay.
There's another really good movie called Scanner Darkly. You'll probably like a lot.
Oh, I've really. Heard of that.
See, no,
it's the same animation style.
But it's more subdued than this one. This one goes a little wild. I remember one scene where he's talking to the, I think it's a legit professor that's talking about the, like, how evolution is, it has biological components, societal components and stuff like that. And like the guy is a hand talker, and you could like, they just went to town on the animation for his hands. Like it was like Stretch Armstrong type stuff going on.
The way that they like embellish facial expressions, yes, and stuff like that. I don't know. I think that's probably like one of my favorite things about the whole
I liked whole it movie. Better. And I was thinking about it in contrast to Scanner Darkly, and I was like, man, I kind of wish they'd went sort of all out on it, where it looks more like a traditional rotoscoped film.
Well, they use different animators for every scene or every episode of this one.
I would imagine. I was actually watching the credits of this because it was neat. They had the actor's name next to their like little character from their art style, and I don't think it was like massive amounts of animation.
No, they did use different animators for every.
Each one? Just like maybe the same people did two or three scenes, I'm thinking. Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe every episode had it, maybe every episode was a different animator, but they did use different ones. It's kind of like that episode of Bob's Burgers where they had all the yes, guest animators.
The fan animators. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've seen that one. That's good. All right, so I will say this. When I went into this film, I was like, all right, I can tell it's going to be kind of artsy-fartsy. And then when the musicians started up, I was like, if I hear French, I'm punching out of this movie. I am done here. But I will say this. I was like up doing stuff while I first tried to start watching this movie. And I was like, because I ended up pausing it, I think that really helped me the way I viewed it. I would almost watch this movie like broken down into each section, like spend 5-10 minutes watching this section, pause it, take a couple minutes to think about it, and then watch the next one. Because they're not really too interconnected. You can...
No. Well, and that's something that... My big takeaway from the movie was... it reminded me a lot of Slacker.
Okay.
The whole day in the life,
yeah,
kind of approach. But this one is...
Day in the dream?
Preachy.
It's preachy.
Yeah.
Whereas Slacker, you're just like observing all of these vignettes... Yeah. Happen. This is
it's vignettes with a like emphasis on philosophy and stuff like that.
So I mean, I'm sure it's a much better movie than my takeaway. It's one of those because I always struggle with having to be in a very specific mindset for certain types of movies, and this is one of those where I was not in the right headspace to watch this kind of thing.
Sorry.
No, go for it.
Okay, it reminded me of my brother, which I think kind of fits in with the college freshman or whatever, even though he's not a freshman anymore. But he still has, like, I feel bad, because he's, like, what, 20-something? He's 8 years younger than me, 25, 27, I don't know. But I still don't take his opinion very seriously. And, like, he thinks he's being super deep a lot. But I think this had some merit, but at the same time, it also felt really like because he was pretty young when he made this, right?
He did Slacker.
I feel like
early
if you're
90s?
Trying to like gain real meaning from the different scenes that they jump around, like they definitely like masquerade it as like, oh, this is like deep and insightful. But I think if you lose track of the fact that like the whole thing is you can't really tell if Wiley Wiggins, after he gets smacked by the car at the very beginning of the film, if he's dreaming, alive, like what exactly is going on. Yeah. And that's interesting that you say that, because I pointed that out. I'm like, I can't tell if he like straight up died.
Yeah.
You know? And a lot of people that I've talked to about it have like questioned that. They don't.
I mean, it kind of makes sense. Like, and it's, I would honestly hope...
Spoilers.
Yeah. I mean, but it's also the first 10 minutes of the film. I'd say this. I take the viewpoint personally that it's not him being dead. And it's just a bigger, you know, just discussion of philosophy and things like that. Because I'll say this. I think the movie would lose something if that was the point. If it was like... I don't know why I want to compare it to Memento, but like if you know the backstory... Like, when you solve Memento, like, you know what's happening, it's like, oh, it kind of kills the movie a little bit.
I think the biggest argument against him being dead is the fact that if he were to actually have died in that scene, he would have the boat and that the driver, all of that would have had to have been like taking place in reality.
Yeah.
Right.
And that seems a little off for this for some stuff that seems like to both try to ground itself and be pretty wild. An answer to your question, Samantha, he was 40 when he did this.
I didn't know.
So let me ask you this, and I think Robert really hit on something. This is definitely something that would have hit like freshman year when you were young and still studying philosophy. Did you guys, either of you guys, and I've brought this up in Bioshock back in the day, how much time did you spend like learning philosophy in school?
Not a lot.
Zero.
Two classes.
I did not go to college.
So that's fine. But I took philosophy classes in both high school and college. So I definitely like dug all the stuff. And I honestly still actively do some philosophical reading and things like that every now and then. But I think Samantha also had a really good point of sometimes this stuff can come across as like really
up its own ass.
Up its own ass is the best way to explain it.
There were some things I like, there were some lines I enjoyed. Some things were a little thought-provoking, but then I don't know if I'm just being cynical, but then I like go back around and I'm like, shut up.
I think there were points that were a little bit like too much, but then they also did at least a good point of like pointing out, man, nobody knows the answer to this stuff, and they would crack jokes at some of the stuff, and that was great.
I think some of the scenes too, it looked like they were trying to be intentionally funny.
Okay.
With a vague thing like the scenario where it's the two women in the coffee shop talking about all these deep things, like you're never gonna see that in real life.
Yeah, that scene bothered me because of it didn't sound like a natural conversation at all.
It was just a pure script read.
Yeah,
so I figured that was them being funny. Like the fact that this is happening, even though you would never see it happening, is the funny part.
All right, so let me just go around and ask this. What was everyone's favorite vignette? Okay. I'll start.
I hate it, but I like the, what's his name? Driving in the car.
Alex Jones.
Really? That was pretty strong one. I'll give you that.
It's more relevant now.
Yeah.
I'm like, Jesus Christ, you hear these people every time you turn on the TV.
True.
So my personal favorite is the one where the guy sets himself on fire.
Yeah,
that is a great conversation that they're having, and like the animation is just like, we're just walking down the street, I'm just stopping to get gas. Oh wait,
super
a minute.
nonchalant,
and then like his little last speech of like, I'm gonna do something that just further cements my silence in all of the system, and just, you know, self-immolates himself.
The bar scene was pretty good
too. That was good. That was almost like a joke in the middle of it.
I was gonna ask you guys, like, I was gonna kind of like frame this discussion around like what y'all thought about like the scenes with violence in them, because I listened to the RoboCop episode where you were like, it's violent for the sake of violence. Hopefully that's not
this was way more
grounded
in reality.
It was just like a story you might actually hear at a bar, is the way it struck me as. Is like, so that one was, I didn't think it was overly violent or anything like that.
It's crazy how relevant like the Alex Jones story and the
bartender story. Yeah,
like no better defense than a well-armed populace, and they both end up,
yeah, they're both dead,
clapping each other.
Yep.
What about you, Samantha? Do you have a favorite one?
I did like the bridge scene because it reminded me so much of Twin Peaks, I think.
Okay.
My least favorite one was with that. He's just walking with that other guy who's around his age, and he just slowly becomes like this pink.
that one was
so weird.
A little odd.
Yeah.
I get that too. I was like, I kind of like intermixed those two. But I was like, yeah, the pink guy one was a little too much, I think.
His way of speaking was not nice, and then he just became gross.
Okay, so you guys want to hear something interesting? This actually was a financial success. It had a budget of,
it was an indie film, right?
Yeah, $2 million.
Okay.
And made 3.2.
So only $2 million?
Yeah. Dang. I was surprised by that too.
That's why they used all those animators. Probably up and coming.
Which means unpaid internship.
Paid in
it's a passion
exposure.
Project.
Yeah, the main character right now? In this, I don't know if anyone mentioned that or not, but he was like the main character, or he was like the kid in Dazed and Confused, like the long-haired kid.
I think I've seen that one time.
I've actually not seen that film.
I remember it was good. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's what I kind of got the vibe from it. I was like, eh. But a few of these other films I have seen, so that's cool.
School of Rock?
I've seen School of Rock.
That's where I was getting my wires crossed. I'm like, it's some sort of like, you know, movie.
I could see the director of School of Rock doing a Spy Kids movie. It makes sense in my mind. Yeah. Totally does. Samantha has such a look on her face.
I was just trying to think about School of Rock. That's a, you know, that's a real place over on Kingston Pike.
Did that place come before or after the movie?
I think after.
I assume after, yeah.
But if you ask them, they'd probably say we legally, distinctly came out before that film. So
please don't sue us.
Don't sue us.
They may be across the country.
Could be. It could be a chain.
A rock chain?
A chain of musical stores for you to rock and learn to rock from.
Or it's like a non-profit program. That would be my
guess. One learn how to rock?
There is the philosophical argument that it has to be born into your soul.
I feel like it is, personally.
When School of Rock first came out, all of us young as we were obsessed with the blonde kid. What's his name? Freddie. My friend Hannah, she said that she met him in an AOL chat room, and she was chatting with him on AIM. We were like, that's so cool. She got catfished.
Oh. Mm. Wow.
The old classic obscure movie star AOL chat room catfish.
Yep. Who's your favorite person? Freddie from School of Rock. Well, you're not going to believe this. I'm him.
It's me, Freddie from School of Rock. All right, Mike,
really
since
12.
You're the resident musician, do you have to be born with the soul to rock, or can it be instructed and developed?
From what I've observed, it's a little bit of both. It's not completely, if you're not born with any kind of skill, you can't achieve some level of skill. But the people that are the best.
Wait, are we equating skill with the ability to rock, though?
No. You got to learn some of the skill, even if you don't have it. But then you have to find the rock in your heart.
That's right.
And let it out.
Some of it is innate, and
Dwayne,
some of it
you?
Is polishing your craft.
Gotcha.
You got to put the work in.
Which is why some
play
of us
those scales.
A plate of scales?
Sounds delicious. Well, I think, does anybody have anything left to say about this waking life before we, I don't know, close our eyes and enjoy a plate of scales?
I'm glad y'all found value
I really did. I enjoyed
makes
it.
Me happy. I came here afraid that y'all would be angry with me.
No.
the real recording will be tomorrow.
No. It's not like when Samantha, you know, suggests a movie. Then we're angry.
No,
always so angry.
I'm used to having to defend my things, but history's always on my side.
I mean, I figured we would just like roast a worst case scenario.
No, it was not worthy of roast. Legitimately enjoyed it.
Even though it does remind me of my brother a little bit, it still had some actual things. It still had some actual little nuggies.
Does he listen to this?
No, I don't even think he knows it exists. Are you kidding me? I hear from him like every 3 months.
All right. Well, if nobody has anything else to say, I guess we'll say goodbye here, folks. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.